Winona's going to just give you a sense of what the cost is for her as a kid and for her later in her life.
Yes, round of applause, please, for Rain. I'm 29 years old, and as I think right now, I haven't really met anybody of Caucasian descent that really talked about the race issue, especially far as the prison industrial complex, and really talked about the history piece and really put it into some context of trying to understand it right now today. So I greatly appreciate being here, and also even more, I feel inspired just seeing the number of people in these seats interested in knowing about the war on women and families. I want to just tune right into a page that Rainey so much have worked to help illuminate my voice, as well as the struggle of so many other kids who are affected by their parents going to jail. This is something that I wrote back in, time is going real quick right now, so it was probably when I was 19, something like that. And I was part of an organization called Chicago Legal Advocates for Incarcerated Mothers. Coming out of penitentiary, juvenile penitentiary, at a young age, there was no place for young people to go when you do so much time. And I, as a young person, like Rainey talked about, I was affected by the automatic transfer, the war on drugs, so to say. I was sentenced to 4 years at the age of 16 years old for possession of cocaine intent to deliver. But one of the things I want to first start off with is this poem. And it's called The Day My Mother Was Sent Away. The day my mother was arrested was the beginning of my life destruction. No one would ever actually understand me until their mother is legally separated from me. I know what my mother did was wrong or against the law, but I already don't have a father. Now they done took away my mother. I can't seem to understand this, for where is my mandatory love, education, and home disciplines going to come from? A lot of people assume that my mother is the cause of these changes, but regardless of who caused such problems, the consequences are not solving them. For so long, I tried to make sense out of these state rules and regulations. But for some reason, I can't understand why there isn't any alternative punishment for crime-convicted mothers with babies. I know this may not be true, but is the state trying to rectify the problem, prolong it, or maybe just create something totally new? I truly don't know. I'm now an older woman with children of my own, facing many issues, not only within myself, but also the issues I face in order to await to meet my mother. I sometimes ask myself if this punishment my mother and I are receiving is actually accurate. And all honestly, I say it is not. For this was my mother's first offense and the crime was not violent. But still, the state changed my goals, the goals of my mother, and the goals of my sisters and brothers the day my mother was sent away. You know, like you all, you know, we just want to live simple lives. We just want to just go do our time, give back to our children, and just live. Had I not experienced some of the things that I witnessed in my life, I would not believe what's going on within our prison today. And when I talk about, I wouldn't believe that. At the age of 16 years old, growing up in the Ada B. Wells, being raised by a single parent who was addicted to drugs, being raised in a community that was infested with violence and lack of role models and resources. As a black kid growing up here in America, south side of Chicago, I couldn't see my future. It was for a long time, and at a young age, I thought at the age of 18, I was going to kill somebody. Somebody was going to kill me, or something was going to happen with my life. I could not see it through. At the age of 16, I remember having that real innocent outlook on life. But then, before I even made it to 8 years old, I recognized that there was something wrong with my skin color. I remember me and my sister having tea parties and we acting white. Please. It was something wrong with my skin color. But I didn't give much question to that because, you know, it was just a thought in my head. But as I started to grow and I started to question my own self-development, as I got older, my mind got wider, broader, more intense. I started wanting things. But the media was giving me what I wanted outside the projects. I see people with cars. I see people smile. And I see people act like family. And as I got older, I also started to realize that I wasn't getting too close to that. Actually, I was getting farther away from it. How? Because as I got older, people started to ignore my needs. And where did it start first? It started in my own household. My mom. But then after that, it started with my sister. I started to look to my older sister and brother. Hey, don't y'all feel something wrong with this? Couldn't get it there. Before anybody can calculate what happened, I just started living. I just started making decisions. I just knew that something needed to happen. And some of those decisions were not the righteous decisions. And honestly, some of those decisions I would not have made had I had a different upbringing, different household. But on February 2nd of 1992, it's like a new birthday for me. I was charged with possession of cocaine, intent to deliver, within 1,000 feet of a school, and I was on CHA property. I was told back in 1992 that I committed a felony. To my surprise, I didn't even know what a felony meant. What is that? Your whole life is going to waste, little sis. They told me I was an automatic transfer. It's like, how's that different from the guys getting out the next day? What's so different about it is that they just made a new law, little sis, that you didn't know about. They said you were supposed to know, but how do you know about the laws? Do you find that on TV channel Law? Do somebody come to the community and pass out new law information? Where do a young black child get the law from? Something to place on all of our minds. Well, I was infected by this law. And I remember thinking that I get out like the boys get out. They get caught, you see them out smiling like, hey, you just got locked up yesterday. You know, I thought it was going to be the same thing that happened to the boys happened to me. But what happened was is that was the last time I seen my friends and our youngsters. And I want to say three poems to move real quick, because when I sat down in that place when I was a young child, tears used to just run out down my face. And I used to wonder, how could they do this? Why the public not doing anything about this? Who's advocating for my rights? Who's fighting for us? This seemed like this not far from slavery. Most of these sisters up in here look just like me. Minorities. I'm a child. Somebody's supposed to be investing in my future. What happened to that person that comes over and say, wow, young lady, your name is Winona Thompson, and you committed a class X felony. Wow, you're so beautiful. You're so young. What would ever persuade you to? Did you just lose your mind? Listen, nobody came and asked me those questions. And I waited patiently for someone to come ask me those questions. Because if somebody would have asked me those questions, they would have gave me the opportunity to tell them everything that was going on in my life. Mind you, nobody really ever asked me that question up until this day. I remember when I used to sell drugs, and hustle, people used to say things, you're a beautiful young child, where's your mouth? And I used to want them to ask more questions, but yet it stopped. So when I was locked up, I knew people wouldn't believe some of the things that was going on in my head. I couldn't believe it. And so I made these 3 points. The first one is called, I was so close to a famous star. I was so close to a famous star, not thinking of what could happen if I got caught. All that matters was the money and friends, never thinking of my family nor how they've been. But now that I'm locked up, it gives me more time to think about all the wrong I did and all the wrong I've seen. Sometimes I wander off in my dark, lonely, quiet room. How can a sweet young girl turn into the devil's right foot? Now I know things like that can happen. I'm a living witness that the devil has some kind of power. Well, it's not the end, it's just the beginning. All I gotta do is trust in God and pray for forgiveness. In a short period of time, I had what I've been missing. Spiritually, had to dig deep down inside of myself at the age of 16 years old. Come take this journey with me through jail. Police sirens everywhere. You have the right to remain silent is what he said. Attempt to deliver cocaine substance is not worth being here. A steel bracelet connects my hand behind my back. Get up, turn around, the man with the bag demands. Captive hostage, that 10 feet long and 8 feet wide room, away from mom, sisters, and brothers. I lay on the steel bench like a fetus in a womb. Long ride traveling upstate against my will. Welcome to Warrenville Youth Division. A sign greeted me. Black, white, Hispanic girls stare with their boogeyman eyes. I awakened to every morning if it was execution time. One day, 1 week, 1 month, that go a year. Jesus, how long must I suffer? Is this truly the American dream? Last point. Don't you hate it? But you can make it. Don't you hate it when you're young and it's hard to speak out for your rights? Don't you hate it when your family is dysfunctional and know if they don't treat you right? Don't you hate it when you get placed in a facility and they take the majority of your rights? Don't you hate it when you ask yourself, what is the purpose of life? We're born, we grow, we struggle, then we die. But as we get older, we also get wise. Things that happened in the past will be understood and will be able to come out right. But if you grow and fall, if you grow and take this the wrong way, you will fall and hit the curb someday. It's a place in this world for all of us. So short, please, don't give up, especially not today. And when times get tough and it's hard for you to hold it in, you go to your room, you grab a Bible, or you talk to a close friend. All this pain shall pass only if you allow them to. It's a place in this world for all of us, Shorty. So please, don't give up. Like I said, no time soon. And those are the 3 poems that I was left. Thank you. Those were the 3 poems that I was left to write to myself as I witnessed some of the things that younger generation of people like myself was going through. And as I witnessed these things, as I mentioned to you all before, I didn't have a place. My mother wasn't there. She was locked up. So much of my time being locked up was more so trying to prepare myself for that day when I would get out. And the hardest thing, even to this day, when you got young girls, youth today, being locked up and coming from those abused and traumatizing communities and those oppressed communities and those lacking resources communities and all those communities that is quote-unquote supposed to be in redevelopment but actually more broken because there's no continuity and no community, no history, and no base for our young people to understand some of those past struggles. When you look at some of these young sisters up in these facilities, the same thing that happened to me are the same thing that's happening to them. But one of the most amazing things that I'm finding as I work as an advocate, as I work as a youth organizer, and as I work as a public speaker, I have found that it's not too many of the little sisters coming up like me as I thought they would. Why? Because like Rainey already talked about it, it's so much, the trauma that we have been through in these communities have silenced us beyond our own level of recognition of how much we have been harmed. A lot of young people right now, all that they want, they think that they need is a job. I just need a job. They cannot articulate some of the harm and some of the problems and some of the conditions that our society have been dealing them socially. They cannot articulate that. And so as I stand here with you all today, I already know what the big problem is. I already know it. Now, one of the things is to continue to educate people about what the problem is. But books like these, it never lets society in America forget the harm that it's doing to its peoples. And on top of that, it gives people like Rainey give the public the opportunity to know this without actually going behind some of those experiences and in such a depth way. One of the things that I would like to say to you all today is that when I talk about there's not too many young people coming up like myself, I just heard my daughter, I got a daughter 11 years old and I got a son 10 years old. And I do feel like I broke a level of a cycle of violence that was happening in my family, because I feel like I was the first to graduate from college. I feel like I was the first to understand the continuation of the conditions of black people that stem from slavery. I feel like I was the first to utilize my personal experience to not as a crutch to depend on the public assistance, but as a fight and a boat to have allow other people to open up the wound that they have from this. But at the same time, to open up those wounds as strength and not as weakness. You know what I'm saying? Don't look at your incarceration as, stigmatized for life. Nah, understand that. Unfortunately, our society, American society, does not have institutions or places where we can just go have checkout moments. Look, today, I'm going to check out. Please don't bother me. No, what they call for checkout moments. Mental institutions, drug rehabilitation centers, incarceration. So a lot of times when people get placed in there, they become broken. One, their confidence. You got a lot of young sisters in jail right now when they have children. Go to 26 in California. Wait as a visitor. That wait in itself is dehumanized. And to have a child, we all want our children to be happy, have confidence, right? But be a child of a person incarcerated. See how much confidence you have then. See how much of your outlook you have then. Calculate the fear you're going to have in yourself. When I say calculate the fear, to be able to go to 26 in California and see your parent on the other side in a suit. Then you can't hardly talk to them because you can't hear them because everybody else trying to holler and hear their family too. Then one of the hardest things is that you can never touch them as you're leaving. And we're talking about kids who supposedly haven't did anything. And we're talking about parents who are either struggling with drug addiction, who have struggled through abuse, who are struggling with poverty, and are making some real careless decisions. There's a lot of scared mothers out here. And there's a lot of fathers that's not there. And if they are there, they're not really having a mindset to really pull the family up and help them to become and help them to look at this system as, hey, we can navigate through this. You got a lot of mothers out here, single parent mothers out here, that's trying to live up to what the government is asking them to do. But you got also a lot of them that have been infiltrated. The generation of young people that you see in grammar school today come from my generation of people. That's scary when me and two sisters talking about these our generation, girl. ADD, ADH. What else they call our kids? Criminal matter, sexual deviance. Same stereotypes. Majority of the young kids today are being incarcerated from the school, public school system. If they curse a teacher out, that teacher say she feel like her life is threatened, they're going to jail. If they don't go incarcerated, they're going through the juvenile justice system. You got young kids today that see that our kids are smart. They see what's going on. And if you ask yourself right now, if these are my generation kids, not just mine, but all of us, as far as of my age, most of them mothers did not have the basic care that they need. Some of the mothers come from gang-banging backgrounds. Some of the mothers committed murder. Some of the mothers have been beaten and faces just disfigured. Some of the mothers do need mental psychological evaluation. Some of the mothers are financially broken. When you talk about education, we are relying on Pell Grants. We ain't going to tell you that. We're not going to let you know that. One part of us don't know how to communicate. But another part of us don't want to look at our lives and say we have not been successful to our children. Now, one thing about me as a parent. I'm struggling with a lot, even to this day. I see the wholeness of our problems as a society. I can't always deal with it in a way that's going to make everything all lovely. But one of the things that is so painful is that because I am the same skin color as some of these people that are dealing with it, even I go to them with hope, with inspiration, they don't seem like, they don't feel that much like, they still don't feel like I can do this. I can graduate from UI, and you all can see me on the TV. They'll get happy for that. They'll support me for a minute. But then they go back to that level of oppression. Why? Because they don't see a whole change for the community. And as you all see the state of African Americans today, a lot of times when we hear it on the news, we either target it as criminals or either looked at as don't want to work. Now we're being put against Mexicans. Look at what this is doing to us in our communities. And I am one little small fighter that's just about a little wit. The same thing that y'all got in y'all, I got in me to speak out. But one of the greatest problems is that if we're locking up the mothers, then we got the young adult women incarcerated. We got 15 years. They give up 15 years off top. And then we got the teenagers. Hey, the teenage girls are in prison. And they are the fastest growing rate. And I speak to these sisters at the juvenile, Cook County Juvenile Detention Center. And when I go in to talk to these sisters, you can just look at them and see the spirit, the hope, just zap that up. And when you go to talk to them, you can see them, and they want to gravitate to you, and they want to squeeze everything that you got to offer to them out of them. But yet when they get out, they back into those same predicaments. That's why the recidivism rate is so high amongst the juvenile detention centers. And when Rainey talked about this is a prison industrial complex, I was educated. I was allowed to be educated in my college years. And when I say allowed to, it was some information that I learned during my college years that they didn't tell me while I was in grammar school. And I asked the professor, I was supposed to know this back then. And he told me, he said, well, if the status quo teaches you this when you're in grammar school, they fear that you will revolt. You will grow and take this, and you become angry. And by you being young, you're fearless, and you'll come out and you attack them. I was like, oh, they're smart. So they teach it to me when I'm about 20, and I got some sense not to go run out and do something crazy. It's like, hey, now you can learn that. You can trace it, you can face it, then erase it. But how could you erase that? How could you erase when you see that your children are about to go through that? How could you erase that? That's why you got so many mothers right now self-medicating themselves. That's why you got so many mothers, some of the mothers want to jump out in front of their ramp and just let the train roll over. Some of the mothers just disappear. Now you got it happening to the young sisters. I just found out today, a girl, 11 years old, tried to commit suicide in grammar school. My daughter's class. And that just hit, it's like lightning rod. Ooh. How do you come back then? Who's out there supporting that girl? Who's there letting that girl know that your life is more valuable? Who's to say what her parents? Who's to say why she even decided to do that?
Quick, Winona. I forgot one statistic. You're just reminding me of it. 25% of the women who are incarcerated have attempted suicide. Well, she just reminded me that one of the statistics when I was giving you the profile of women is that 25% of the women who are incarcerated have attempted suicide. And I think it's Cornel West said that if John Coltrane, probably the greatest jazz musician of this past century, if he hadn't picked up a saxophone, he would have picked up a gun because of his rage as a young black man. And I think she's describing that to us. I had asked her, we've only got a few minutes left, I asked her to talk about and I'm going to ask you to do it like that, what it's like when you come out of prison. And you'll be startled just to hear that.
Well, first of all, you're traumatized. You want to make sure that whatever you did to get in jail, you never do again. When you get locked up, you know that whatever you did to get locked up, you did for survival reasons. I was traumatized. I was scared to go outside. I knew I needed a place, a support place, but yet I couldn't find that. I tried to get on a good foot. Quote, a good foot. I found myself trying to get employment, but every time you come across that question, have you ever been convicted? You know, you pretty much just stare onto the paper. How can I answer this to get the job? Another thing is that I didn't have a place to stay. My mom, you know, household being so dysfunctional, you know, I needed room to grow. I needed room to live. And so I knew I couldn't go back there, so I was particularly homeless. The only place that they had for me was City Girls, and that was a drug treatment center. I went into drug treatment center and found myself going through some chaotic situations there. And I was told that that if I go to a mental institution, that they'll help me out better. They'll help me quicker transitioning to my own place and things like that. Well, they kicked me out of the City Girls, and they also kicked me out of the mental institution. How do you get kicked out of a mental institution? I know. So pretty much I was just left back into the same society.
Plus you tried CAJ. Tell them about that.
Exactly. I tried to get my own apartment. They had this logo came out that, you know, as they was tearing down the apartments or making rehabilitation to the apartments, that if your mom have a lease and you're on the lease, you can get your own apartment, right? So I was ready to get my own apartment. I went to go sign the lease. I went to go apply for housing. And then they told me that if you was ever convicted of a felony, you can't get housing. And so, you know, now I'm sitting in the lobby room like, I'm living here. Where am I going? And it's like, well, we can't do anything for me. So pretty much I had to advocate. I was told that I couldn't get housing. I pretty much talked to the director. I had to show up off enough of recommendations to get me in. Luckily, she opened up her heart and gave me that housing. But I feel like if I didn't have this passion and this drive and this level of faith to speak out, I'd be like so many people who don't have housing right now. I'd be out of it.
I just think if you imagine this, reentry, you cannot get SSI if you have any drug-related crime for a lifetime. So there's no welfare, there's no public housing, and this last thing that she's telling you is that they tell you first go to drug rehab, you know, then go to a mental. What I think that points out is that this population of women and kids are the most invisible population in America. And at the same time, they are the most highly scrutinized of all. That is, someone is always looking. And I say this because, you know, Michel Foucault, any of you who took Dragon know Michel Foucault, the great postmodernist, he said that we live in a carcel network. And by carcel network, he means that we're continually being observed, all of us. Many of us who are here are not going to be the people who are going to be imprisoned. But their very imprisonment is like theater that tells us what we better do or we're going to end up like them. So this carcel network is total and complete. And what Michel Foucault said is, in a sense, we're all in prison. Because we're permitting this to happen to some people. And it means that one group of people are highly scrutinized by child welfare, by mental institutions, by the police, by if they had a kid that went to the criminal justice system, if they have to deal with any issues of welfare, if it's public housing. Someone's always watching the population of the poor. And at the same time, they're kept invisible from the public eye. So that's what the carcel network is. And it's both a system and a process. And it, It flows through bureaucracies, institutions, schools, hospitals, criminal justice system, and it's ongoing.
And when you talk about scrutinizing, we also talk about exploitation, correct?
That's right.
You know, when you see somebody in a black community, and you know, a class, Northeastern, one of the teachers one of the students actually pointed this out. I was like, how are young people today targeted as criminals? He was like, well, the anti-gang lottery law. And I'm trying to be smart, right? I'm coming in here to get a preview. So what does that mean? Well, for example, when Caucasians walk down the street, you know, in groups and packs, they walk down for protection. I was like, wow, that's cool. But when blacks do it, oh, that's a gang. That's a disturbance. That's a problem. And so that's the way that they kind of like targeted black people. And so that's what I wanted to talk about as far as exploitation, is that once they say that black people are walking into gangs, then they say, well, we need police patrol from 3 to 6 when kids get out of school. And why are we going to, you know, first, for a long time, can I say this, Rainey,
sure.
Please? Okay, thank you. For a long time, you know, I remember reading the history books, and they were saying that, you know, black men got lynched, right? When they wanted to tear down a family, they went to the black men, right? And a lot of times what they did was they took the biggest black strong man and they stripped him, dehumanized him in front of everybody else, right? And that was a way of letting everybody else know, see what happened to Billy here? And Billy way bigger than you. You don't want that to happen to you, right? So that was with the men, right? But then they found another problem stemming up, right? The black woman. Black woman started and said, baby, look, you just going on back down the back room somewhere and be all right. I'll go out and get the education. And I'll go out, get the jobs, and bring all that back to you. Okay, Bill? Bill's like, hey, don't get lynched. That's fine with me, you know? But then as the woman went out, she started to take up, you know, the role. You know, she started to take care of things. But then that was a problem because the family was still some way, somehow being intact, right? So what happened then? Got to find somewhere to break that black woman. So how you do that? Let's put some drugs in the black man and let the black man infiltrate the black woman. And then once the black woman take all this, then let's start locking them up for being mule for the black man. But actually, we're locking them up because we need them to be broken. Okay, that's working, right? But then you got some smart kids coming out. Well, the kids, some of these kids are smart. Some of these kids are making. But then, once we break the mother, somehow, who's going to take care of the children? And then once the kid goes through some of these systems and goes through some of these changes, actually, wait a minute. We're going to need somebody to fill up these prisons as the mothers and the fathers die off. So we need children to start populating the prisons as young as 11. So that we'll have a continuing population of young people filling up our adult prisons. And Rainey, didn't you just tell us that they had so many number of prisons today and they're constantly building prisons?
Yeah, I mean, this could sound conspiratorial until you see the numbers, you know. And once you see the numbers, you know that bodies fill the prisons. And the question is, well, what's the process that gets the bodies there? And I'm suggesting it's this hypervigilance that's continually targeting. Some bodies will be expendable and some bodies will be incarcerated. And I think it's gendered racism. And it's a whole system, and that's what she's, you know, describing, and I'm suggesting the numbers. I mean, a 400%
increase. This with the child welfare system, too.
Oh, so, and the child welfare system. That's, if we started to get into that, we'd be really looking at what happened.
Conspiratorial things, yeah.
Well, we need to open this up for a few questions, and we can't be too many. Nina's giving me the signal, but we're going to disobey, so it's...
Every year since I've been 3, somebody in my family has been incarcerated. But on the other hand, I have a master's degree, and I'm caught in the middle of this world that is full of lies. So I appreciate you not taking the power with your knowledge and not acknowledging where the power is not. So thank you very much for bringing both of your sides here. And my question is, you know, you write books and people see things on TV like Hurricane Katrina and the effects. And then I teach classes to children who come from suburbs or come from middle class families or rich families, and they want to remain ignorant. How do you challenge that? How do you challenge a nation that wants to remain ignorant? Because as long as you remain ignorant, you never have to acknowledge the problem.
Well, I think that's part of this car sale network. It's run on fear. Everybody's afraid. You know, people are afraid to be arrested, and the other people are afraid to deviate or to break any rules because they could end up like that. So, and then all you have to do is listen to the president tell you that, you know, terrorists are going to get us, that we've got to, you know, go to Iraq in order to protect ourselves. It's all based on fear. And so the ignorance, you know, beneath that ignorance is, I'm afraid and I don't want to know. And how you break through all of that, you know, I think that the right has been so successful at sort of reinventing these images and stereotypes that the only way I know that you can break through it are two ways. One is you have to have somebody who's been through the experience come and tell you. And then it's a whole different thing. A human being is telling you what this is like. And the other is we have to build a movement. A movement that will resist the prison industrial complex and that will resist all that we're being confronted with. You know, that will rip away the lie that people are not being contained, really, and incarcerated from a very young age, whether they go to prison or not. They're living in conditions that are incredible. 98% of the job growth here in Illinois took place in the Chicago suburbs. Lawndale, in the same period, this was in the year 2000, 98% of the job growth was in the suburbs. Lawndale lost 3,000 jobs. It's an extraction from poor communities, and it's an accumulation at the other level.
And can I say something? When you talk about the level of ignorance, I just spoke to a class. I'm not going to tell you what place it was at, but it felt like, you know, they were just sitting there. I'm like, are you all not interested in prison issues? And, you know, it was like, you know, and I was like, well, I just asked a question. Why do you think it's important that you need to be aware of this? You know, somebody, because somebody in your family go through it? I'm like, perfect. Good point. I was like, but why else? And so then it got to the point, it was like, well, have you ever thought about it that as we let these people out into society, that, you know, it's going to come a time where they infiltrate into your families. They infiltrate into your communities. They infiltrate around in your neighborhoods. And once they infiltrate around and you, and they know that they feel different from you and you're different from them, it's going to be considered the have and the have-nots. And that's the battle that we're in right now to have. And if you don't understand what this person is dealing with, not also where they come from, then you're not equipped to how to refrain from dealing with this person or to how to penetrate. So I quest this to anybody. See yourself as social change agents. When you see what's going on in the TV, allow yourself to question it twice about what really happened behind the scenes. If you're in a room or in a setting with somebody that's talking about the level of population of people in prison, and those people just need to be there, shine light on those who don't. Give them an opportunity to look in a different eye. Because in that small stagnant, that person who individuality issues that have not been looked, you gain an opportunity to understand, meaning that everybody locked up don't need to be there.
Yeah. I'd like to know more about your organization.
My transition?
What you are doing as an organization, because Rennie mentioned that.
Good question.
You know, you didn't talk about it.
Good question.
So,
I didn't want to seem like I was fundraising here. But Girl Talk is an organization that started in 1993. I was actually incarcerated, wondering and hoping, where's an organization such as this one? But it's just a small organization that started as a grassroots organization from students from Northwestern Children and Family Justice Clinic, and they wanted to see what type of programs were populated for the girls. So they came up with this program. After they found that there were none at all, they came up with a program called Girl Talk. And Girl Talk to this day is a program that goes into the facility and provides support, education, as well as awareness, and try to create a space, a safe space where girls can talk about any issues that is affecting them, while at the same time engaging them in some fun activity. I mean, like, how many of us, you know, just get up like, hey, girl, what's going on? Doing, you know, let's talk about this and really talk about it in a way where, man, she knows she lying. Actually, just give it some honesty and give it some truth. Put some realness into the organization. We also does a program on the outside where we try to support the girl as they're coming out. But one of the major and the most profound things that we have been successful with doing is advocate, bringing the voices and the issues of girls, young girls who are populated out into the community. Hopefully that. Thank you.
I was listening when you were talking about how you grew up on the South Side and there was no mentors. The same thing with me. I grew up on the South Side. I had a child at 18. I decided that I didn't want my child to have to see and go through the things that I went through. I was a battered woman. I had been raped twice and was just tired of all of the hopelessness. So I decided that maybe I would try to come north, go to school, and maybe get myself in a better level to live in a middle-class neighborhood, which I did. As I raised my son, and I'm thinking because I'm in a middle-class neighborhood, we have all of these mentors that our children are supposed to look up to. But what really upset me is I have my son going to a decent school for what I think. He comes, he's learning how to go, he go to work, and when he comes home, he feels like he's being harassed so badly by the police. He can't be a regular teenager and dress in teenage clothes, so he has to dress in what he would think would be a uniform, black pants, white shirt, and in his backpack carry a Bible, so that when the police throw him up against the wall to check his backpack, they will see the Bible in his backpack. And for him to come home every night like that after being harassed by someone who is supposed to be a mentor, especially in our judicial system, what can we do to, I guess, to change that besides getting out to talk to the public, because it seems like it's just not happening?
You
want to
just say that again?
I wonder if it's just not happening. The police are not here.
Said, sister, and I just want to just leave it just the way it is, because actually from what I'm doing right now, I really doesn't have a direct point on that. Randy talked about we need to start a movement. You know, it's a lot of things that needs to happen, and one of them is, Randy, could you answer that one, please? I'm still dealing with that right now, sister. I'm sorry.
Well, I just think your son is the smartest strategist kid I've ever heard of. I mean, that he has figured out. But I mean, it what isn't funny is that is the experience of people of color in this country. And it enrages me that goes on constantly. And kids have to go through it. That he would have to start wearing certain clothes. I think it's like theater, but it's a theater of terror. Some people are gonna take a fall, and the rest of us are gonna go, we don't wanna know, and we don't wanna get involved, but God knows we don't wanna take the fall. And in a sense, your son is part of this performance. He's putting on the clothes to dress so that the man leaves him alone. That's what I mean. It's one of these wounds that he's carrying. But he's also outsmarted them.
Yeah.
So in a way, this is the subversion of the people who all they've got is that. People want to know, you know, why is anybody mad? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.